We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all these states, and the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. For boosted parlays to live in-game offs on every major sport, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com. That's WHNNBET.com to start winning.
Blue Wire.
Welcome back. This is the Big Blue Banter, New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier, joined as always my co-host Nick Filato. We've arrived. It is the dead of the offseason, so there's no better time now as we await the 6 weeks before training camp to dive into some position previews. We're going to go position by position, starting with the most important position for the Giants, for any NFL team, the quarterbacks. That's where we start today. But before we do that, my friend Nick, how are you doing, my friend? How you been?
I'm excellent, Dan. I'm excellent out here in Arizona. Went and saw Neil Brennan a couple nights ago at a comedy club out here, which was a good time. Been seeing a lot of comedians at comedy clubs, so just enjoying myself. And I should be heading back to Jersey soon for a wedding, and a couple more times throughout the summer I'll be back up in the Northeast for weddings. So I got to try some good pizza. So I'm going to be texting you asking for some good recommendations, my man.
Yeah, maybe you could text me and ask me to hang too. What the hell, man? Let me know when you're coming up to Jersey. The Arizona trip never worked out, but hopefully we can spend some time in Jersey. I got some recommendations. I got some new stuff brewing. I'm doing great myself. I just spent the weekend in Vermont, actually. My friend Brett is getting married a little bit later. Shout out, Brett. Big fan of the show. One of my best buds from Wisconsin days. He's getting married next month. So, Brett, first of all, we're older now, so things have changed. But Brett is a mountains guy. You know, he's a hiking guy. He was never the club guy. So we did the bachelor party in Vermont up in the mountains. Basically, the idea was just spend some time with friends, hang out, you know, throw it back old school style. And that's exactly what it was. We had a couple fun highlights that I wanted to bring up on the show. For starters, the first day, so we drove up late Thursday night. It's a 4-hour drive up to Vermont from where I am and basically from where everybody was. They were all surrounding states, New York, New Jersey. Once I got up there, I went to sleep pretty early. Well, we didn't go to sleep early. We stayed up. We BS'd and we drank. But we should have went to sleep early, Nick, because the next day we were planning a hike, a 7:30 a.m. hike. So we wake up for this hike, Nick. And Brett, the bachelor, convinces us, let's do the hard one, right? We're all like going back and forth. We want to do an easy one up in Stratton. No. Let's do the hard one. So the one it was described as, Nick, was relentlessly steep. That's the one we decided to do. The only thing in the description was relentlessly steep. I'm like, whatever. I've done some crazy hikes before in Banff. I've done some crazy hikes in Glacier. I'm the man. I can hike anything. I'm going to do this. We get there, and one of his other friends was like, I don't know about this, man. Like, I don't think I can do this. Do we really want to do this? And I was just like, listen, I'm not even worried about it. We get to this hike, Nick. It was literally as billed, relentlessly steep. Brett said he thought I was going to have a heart attack at one point. I needed to constantly stop. I've never been on a hike before like this. It was just straight uphill. There was just no brief patches of flat ground, just ripping uphill. And then by the end of it, Nick, we get to the top and it did clear up. So we got lucky at the end, but it was just like a full overhead cloud hanging over. So you didn't even get the good view really of getting to the top of this 2,800 foot elevation hike. So that was the start. And then after that, I rebounded in a big way, Nick, because I've learned now we're in our 30s, dude. So it's things have changed, but and I still take it way too seriously because I'm obviously just a way too competitive person. But I went 15-1 in beer pong, essentially just ripped through the entire class, whoever came up. Yeah, it was just an absolute clinic that I put on. Now, afterwards, I realized no one really cares anymore about drinking games except for me. There are a few others. There's like one other person. Brett is one of them who was just as competitive. But my competitive nature just takes over in these moments, and I just want to win these games. I take way too much pride in being good at beer pong, for starters. But it was fun to just throw it back and play drinking games on a lawn, you know, out in the sun, day drinking. Just haven't done it in a while. So I was on cloud nine after that. It was a really fun weekend just getting away.
To be young again. But Dan, would you play beer pong with me if I didn't drink the beer? Because I don't drink the beer whenever I play beer pong.
I really hate that about you. I'm going to be honest, Nick. It's just a devastating, real. You know, I have to come to this realization. There's just somebody who just decides not. So do you like hand it all? Like, well, here's the deal. Are you one of those people who like you have to play with a teammate who's just going to handle all the cups? So you'll like pass it to your teammate?
Absolutely not. I'm the teammate that will say, hey, I'll take a swig of my Jack and Diet or just the whiskey straight or whatever I'm drinking at the moment. So I'm still getting drunk.
You're pushing for water pong, right? Because you're pushing for side beers or side drinks. Well, because there are games where it's just beer. Like we played old school beer pong. This is the first time I'd played in a while. Like lately when I've been playing, it's just been water cups and you just have a side beer. You kind of drink it as your own on your own pace or whatever. No one really polices it. This was legit beer pong. Like we were doing three beers a game, 10 cup. You had to really drink. So if you were in that scenario and I was your teammate, Nick, it would be pretty effed up if I had to drink all 10 cups. You know what I mean?
It's revolting. So you were playing with the beer in the cup. Yes. And the dirty ass ping pong
balls. Dirty ping pong balls. Not changing cups out every game, despite their COVID being around still. Just an old school beer pong. Yeah.
Yeah, that is detestable. I would never do that.
I know you wouldn't, man. But look, I can't handle all 10 cups. I mean, I could. I have. But I don't even want to. So I don't know if we'd ever be beer pong teammates, Nick.
Probably make a good team, though, just because
we would.
To be solid.
I have a really good beer pong stroke. I'm just going to be honest with the listeners here. I'll take anybody on anytime. Maybe we'll do it at MetLife this year. I'm going to remember. I threw it out there before, but if anyone wants to meet up, I'd love to meet some of the listeners. I'm going to the Monday night game against the Cowboys in week 3 this year. So if anyone wants to meet up, maybe set up a beer pong and I can show off some of these skills. Show off my skill set. I'm basically the Tom Brady of beer pong. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not that good, but I'm all right. We're going to get to position previews eventually, but we said before that what we want to do is a Daniel Jones deep dive, and that's what this is going to be today. We're going to take a look at some advanced stats, and we're going to take a look at traits, and we're going to project moving forward within the new system. This is the Daniel Jones deep dive of the offseason. Let's talk a little bit about some of the advanced stats here because we dug them up, but let's just go in with a general synopsis of where you're at with Daniel Jones right now. How do you feel about him? What does he need to do this season to kind of sell himself to you for the long term, and what are your expectations for, you know, how he'll adjust to a new system?
Firstly, he needs to stay on the football field. So that's my number one priority in order for me to commit myself to Daniel Jones long term. Is he needs to stay on the football field, not get injured, and also prove that he can adapt and learn this new system and take his game to the next level. So in order to do that, Daniel Jones needs to have quicker eyes. He needs to process a bit faster. He needs to find the open receiver based on the coverage that the defense shows post-snap. And that could be different from what he understood pre-snap, but he needs to do that at a more consistent level. I think that would be my number one thing. That's the thing that we keep saying on this podcast, but it's very accurate. Because Daniel Jones, he makes more positive plays than he does negative plays. Like, I want to make that clear. But every starting quarterback in the NFL does that. It's just he has to mitigate the times when he does do those negative plays, when he tries to do too much with the football. And I feel like the difference in systems right now with Jason Garrett and Brian Daboll, it could be colossally different. We could see more 10 personnel. We might still see a lot of 11. We still could see 12. I'm not really 100% certain. But what I know is there will be different verbiage and there will be different terminology. and there will be different audibles and everything. The entire offense is different. So he needs to prove that he has adapted to that. And we should find that out hopefully early on in the season. So I would say it's all of those things collectively. And then you just take it one series at a time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you bring up some great points there, Nick. For me, I do want the decision to be based on the entire body of work. I think you're selling yourself short as an NFL evaluator and as a, you know, front office management man and a head coach, whoever you want to include in this. If you just base an extension or a plan long term on what somebody did in the most recent season they played, that entire 4-year body of work, including the injury history, needs to be factored into this. Because look, there are times we've seen in the past quarterbacks put together good numbers, big seasons in their first year in a new offense, only for things to kind of fall apart in that second year. And why is that? Because defenses get more film on these quarterbacks. Defenses adjust to what they're doing within the system. And then that's the key right there. What happens next? That to me is what makes a great quarterback. That to me is what makes a quarterback you want to move forward with. How does he react next? What does he do once the defense takes it away? It's not about what he does when the defense isn't used to seeing some concepts or when he's doing things that haven't really been shown a lot on film. We saw this even last year as I looked through these advanced numbers, which we're going to get to in a moment. Daniel Jones was so much better in year one under Jason Garrett, to an extent where you could say, all right, here, come in. Let him flow in. Well, guess what? This with the O-line, this with the injuries, blah, 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 blah. All the things we normally hear to excuse Daniel Jones's play in 2021. It's too much. Like, the difference, Nick, was just too far great. We're talking about massive jumps from his numbers against the blitz, massive jumps from in his numbers of big time throw percentage, in his turnover worthy throw percentage, which really dropped in specific scenarios, which we'll get to again versus the blitz and when he was pressured, from 2020 to 2021. The numbers were really different. They were worse. I know the overall numbers don't look that way. If you just look at the raw stats from 2020 versus 2021, Jones was a pretty similar quarterback. But when you break it down, you look at some of these advanced metrics, even just things that aren't really advanced. I mean, they're not really subjective. It's like big time throw percentage. How many times is he making big throws? Turnover worthy throws. How many times is he putting the ball in harm's way? You know, yards per attempt, which to me is still the best metric for a quarterback, a metric where Jones has been in a bottom seven for his entire career. Against the blitz, when not pressured, when pressured, when not blitz. All four of those categories, Jones has struggled his entire career in yards per attempt. But when you look at some of this stuff, year one to year two of even the same system with Garrett, which we know is a broken, bad system, Nick, he really fell off. So for me, the big thing with Jones is traits-based evaluation from these guys, from Dable, from Shane. They need to figure out if he's shown enough improvement from a traits-based standpoint that he can be the guy moving forward. It can't just be based on this season for me. It just can't be. It has to be the whole body of work.
Absolutely. It should be the whole body of work, as you said, and that includes injury. A lot of it includes what's between his ears. We know he's a great athlete, and we've said several times in the podcast, I don't want Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka to stray away from Daniel Jones's athletic ability because he has been injured so many times. We need all of these things collectively put together.
All right, Nick, let's start there. Give me some numbers on his deep passing and his passing depth overall in his three seasons with the Giants.
I found it kind of interesting, and I guess it makes sense because the offensive line was so bad in 2021, but his deep passing percentage went down each season. In 2019, he passed the ball deep 11.8% of the time, 2020, 9.6%, and then last year was only 6.6% of the time, and he hit on a 33.3% rate. So he was 8 of 24 with 4 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, but no other turnover-worthy plays other than those interceptions, and he was best when he was targeting the deep left portions of the field. He had his 2 touchdowns there and 87 yards, 2 completions on 4 attempts, but he wasn't attempting as many deep throws in 2021, and I think a big product of that was Jason Garrett maybe being a little bit more conservative, albeit in 2020 it was 9.6 down to 6.6, a 3% difference, but it has to be Nate Solder as well, the right tackle situation, which was obviously horrendously bad. But it does seem like, man, just going through the 3 years, Jones's ability to target down the field, whether it be the left, the right, or the center, has been pretty damn good. Now, in 2020, his deep right targeting, he hit 322 yards, a touchdown, no turnover-worthy plays, and he was 9 of 15. So he was able to do that well in 2020. So that deep accuracy stat that we see thrown around from advanced analytics companies like PFF and SIS and places like that seems to be pretty accurate, because Daniel Jones is having a lot of success when he is targeting deep. A lot of those are one-on-one situations, receivers making some plays for him. But I got to say, the ball placement after going through some of the film is also pretty on point.
Yeah, well, 100%. If you're looking for traits, if we're doing a trace-based eval of Jones, this is his best trait still. It has been since his rookie season. His ability to target downfield, his ability to layer the ball downfield. He throws with good touch. Now, to me, a lot of these have been in the good weather games or in the dome stadiums. I still have seen, at least just eye test wise. Yeah. And I know you agree, examples of this waning a bit in those cold weather games down the stretch, that I just think is always going to be the case for him. I mean, if you look at just the combine numbers, I'm getting this from playerprofile.com. He tested in the 37th percentile among all quarterbacks in velocity. So in throwing velocity. So he's never going to be a high velocity thrower. And I think that does hurt him a bit in the colder weather, but you know, a lot of these games are played in domes and some of these games are played in decent weather if they're not in domes, and he's done a really good job in those situations of putting the ball in the right spot, or at the very least, like you said, putting the ball in position where his receiver can make a play on the 50-50 ball, which is why we had so much hope for Kenny Golladay, by the way. That was the main reason we loved this guy coming in last year, and it just never came to fruition, unfortunately. You said it best. The attempts were just way down from 2020 to 2021, and even from 2019 to 2021. Obviously, 24 attempts like you charted from 2021. In 2020, it looks like those attempts were up. Same thing for 2019. And so it's the question you have to ask yourself is why. I think you outlined some good reasons. One would be the right tackle play, though I do think he upgraded from a really good, upgraded in left tackle play in a major way in 2021 from 2020. So I don't know there. It's definitely a factor. The injuries at receiver is also a factor. I think part of the factor is also teams getting more tape on this system and teams sitting on routes and teams understanding the concepts that Jones wants to do within the system. That's the big thing for me when it comes to the system stuff, Nick, because this is the main talking point among Giants fans. Jason Garrett is the main reason that Daniel Jones sucks so bad. And while I think there's a lot of validity to it, we saw it on tape, Nick, week in and week out, a really bad system with sometimes bad situational play calling. But what I wonder, Nick, it's just, and it's, I don't know if there's ever going to be a way to prove it one way or another, which is why I'm just going to toss it to you and see if you have any like further thoughts on it or more advanced thoughts on it. But how much is it a system problem with Jason Garrett, and how much is it a Jones problem? How much is it he has certain concepts he likes within each system, and once you have enough time and once you have enough film on those concepts and you can take those away from him, he just has no answers past that, or he hasn't had any consistent answers past that. Do you have any feelings on that?
I do. I feel if we had a conversation with Jason Garrett, we might, as Giant fans, view this a little bit differently. I think the assessment that Jason Garrett did not have a great offense for Daniel Jones is accurate. But I also think Daniel Jones held back Jason Garrett's offense as well. So I think it was a marriage between the two. Jason Garrett had to play with Dave Gettleman's pieces, which was a really bad offensive line. So he had to operate a lot of quick game and things like that. And he might have did some things that Daniel Jones wasn't fully comfortable with. It became a little bit too predictable in terms of his play calling, which definitely didn't enhance Daniel Jones's skill set. But there are things Daniel Jones doesn't see and didn't see on film that you and I would be like, oh man, I remember a couple of plays against the Kansas City Chiefs. That was a primetime game, another bad weather game, to go to your other point and to go off on a little tangent. What was Daniel Jones' probably worst game of his career was the second game against Philadelphia back in 2020 when it was really, really windy. So you're 100% accurate on the bad weather stuff. But to circle back to that Kansas City game, there were a couple of plays other than that interception on the first play of the game where he had guys open. And he threw the ball to Kadarius Toney like five yards over Kadarius Toney's heads on purpose because there was an underneath defender underneath Kadarius Toney. But in the middle of the field, if he knew the safety went into that direction towards Kadarius Toney along with that cornerback, he had two guys in the middle of the field that were open that could have been easy touchdown passes, but Daniel Jones didn't process it. So obviously the lack of ability to have all of those things firing in Daniel Jones' head at one time held Jason Garrett's offense back as well. And that maybe forced Jason Garrett's hand to be like, okay, we're just going to do these little quick plays and try to have these 16 play drives to get into scoring position, because he didn't trust Daniel Jones to not make a mistake in order to attack deep downfield on a more regular basis. I think there is some merit to that argument as well. It's collected. It's definitely not just individual.
100%. I think one of my biggest frustration points sometimes when talking with Giants fans is the idea that every single play, there was a drop back, Jones was immediately pressured, and there was nothing he could do but get rid of the ball quickly. I think when you watch the tape, it doesn't show that at all. And I think it's really easy to just kind of think back at these hundreds, thousands of offensive snaps that there were and just be like, every single time it was a bad route combination and bad pass protection. But the reality is so far from that. The truth is not that. When you watch the film week in and week out, you have to watch it multiple times for a podcast, you kind of see the differences. There are some interesting route concepts week in and week out from Garrett. Let's be honest about the situation. And there are some plays that are protected better than people realize. And that's one of the big things I want to get to today. Jones's ability and his numbers and some of the advanced stats from when he's in the pocket and he's throwing from a clean pocket, because that's the area, that's some of the areas where he's really struggled as of late. And it's the question for me just comes down to, again, how much is him, how much is Garrett, O-line injury as a receiver, yada yada, all the stuff that we always hear, because that's the real determining factor in what he can be. So eventually, Nick, I do want to on this podcast get to a traits-based evaluation of what Jones is as a prospect right now. And those traits are not only just what he came into the NFL with. I want to base them on what he's shown at the NFL level, because to me, Nick, more than anything else, that's what I need to move forward with Jones. I need him to put all the traits that he's shown, you know, flashes of being really good, into a consistent form, because there are always going to be traits about Jones that I don't think are long-term solutions. His arm talent, I think, is adequate at best. He does not, like I said, 37th percentile velocity, it shows on tape. His ability and his willingness to throw into tight windows, I'm hoping that can change. His pocket presence and pocket manipulation, I'm hoping that can change. And honestly, to be completely honest, his accuracy, which we'll get to a little bit of, has not looked the same as it has, I'm talking in the short and intermediate, in recent seasons, in 20 and 20, and especially 2021. And that also goes into, you know, can he attack the middle of the field? Can he be a weapon as a quarterback in the middle of the field? Because that's really where all these quarterbacks are great. And then finally, can he become somebody who is a winner against the blitz, not somebody who is one of the worst in the NFL against the blitz? Because ultimately, that's what he is to me, Nick. He's always going to be a pocket passer because of his inability to throw off platform from an unbound space. So what you need as a pocket passer, Nick, you need to be able to beat the blitz. So you want to get into some of those numbers against the blitz now?
Yeah, dive right into the blitz. I wanted to actually...
Yeah, well, go ahead. So
because you mentioned the attacking the middle of the field, and I think that's something that maybe we should go into right now, and then we'll get into the blitz. Yep. I think the blitz is kind of the meat and the potatoes of Daniel Jones. So I saw someone posit a question on Twitter about Daniel Jones attacking the sideline and then attacking the middle of the field. So I went through and I looked at some advanced statistics on his completion percentage and passing outside the numbers beyond 5 yards. So I'm not including all of those little quick screens or anything behind the line of scrimmage. Modern NFL tends to have a lot of plays run in that area of the field. So everything beyond 5 yards.
Before you do that, Nick, just explain, just in case we have any questions on this, what you mean by outside the numbers and between the numbers.
Yeah, so the football field is set up in the NFL. You have the two hashes in the middle of the field, and then you have the numbers outside of that, like 10-yard line, 20-yard line, 30-yard line. Outside the numbers is between the numbers and the sideline. And that's important because sometimes when you're throwing from the far hash, it's a lot of space between the far hash and then the sideline. So those are outside throws that not every quarterback has the arm strength and velocity to make. I think Daniel Jones does have the arm strength and velocity to make those throws. Now, is it Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert? No, but it's functional. So beyond 5 yards outside the numbers in 2020, he was 52 of 94. It's 55%. In 2021, he's 36 of 83, 44%. So a little bit of a dip there. Now, there's a lot of context not explained by any of this, like what coverage they're in, if there were drops, et cetera. Right. But then between the numbers, beyond the five-yard line, in 2020, he was 96 of 159, 60%. And then 2021, he was 77 of 116, 66%. And when you kind of go back and you think about the 2021 season, I felt like he did a better job on those dig routes over the middle of the field. We saw it a little bit against New Orleans with Kenny Galladay. You saw it sparingly on a little in routes, just beyond even 5 yards. If you look at, you know, the 10 plus yard range, he was at 15 of 23 attacking the 15 to 20 yard range, right side of the field. And then 13 of 18 attacking that same area. So that's between the numbers right at the numbers, all the way through the middle of the field to the other numbers. That's not a bad percentage at that point of the field. So you know he can throw the ball deep. He's solid at that point of the field when usually it's zone coverage. There's a lot of players in that area. He can put touch on the ball to fit it into those areas. And that's something that we've seen. And then directly in the middle of the field at that same area, 10 to 20 yards, he was 5 of 9. So it's not like he's incapable of doing so. I feel like a lot of it comes down to him being a little bit tentative to make a mistake. And I wanted to pose this question to you. Could that be because of the way Joe Judge and Jason Garrett was teaching him, whereas Brian Daboll isn't necessarily being like, oh, you can't make a mistake. He's, you know, being a little bit more laissez-faire in a good way.
Yes, for sure. There's a lot to unpack there. I want to start with the first thing you said. We talked earlier about what does Jones do as well. Well, one of his best traits is his ability to throw downfield. This is another one of his best traits, in my opinion, Nick. The arm talent when it comes to his ability to attack the intermediate to deep middle of the field. You talked about the deep digs to Kenny Golladay. Well, one thing that makes these throws a bit more special than your average NFL throw is that oftentimes he has to fit it into a tighter window because it has to be over that second level group of defenders and obviously right before those safeties. And the only way to do that is by putting the right trajectory on the football and obviously putting enough velocity on the football so the safety doesn't catch up to it. Or in another sense, if the linebacker can kind of drop back and put a hand in the throwing lane and tip it or something like that, if the velocity is waning. So I actually think you're right. This is another area of Jones's game where we can look at a trait and say, well, this is a quarterback who had a lot of times, at least in my opinion, has at best adequate arm strength. And it's not at best. It's clearly, I want to rephrase this. It's not at best adequate arm strength. It is adequate arm strength. He has very adequate arm strength, which is not a bad thing, by the way. It's a pretty solid thing. Like Jimmy, there's been quarterbacks who have been successful with adequate arm strength. It's just a matter of.
I would contend that's a little bit more than adequate, I think.
Okay.
I mean, it depends on how you're. I would say so. Yeah. Like if I'm looking at it, like there's poor, marginal, adequate, solid, good, very good, excellent, elite. Oh. I think Jones. Yeah. So like I think you would agree probably. It's solid. Like I think it's an NFL solid arm. It's not.
I think we're thinking the same thing, just using different terms for it.
Yeah, I think that's fair then.
Yeah, so sure. And I'm willing to, we're definitely both on that same page. But, wow, crap, what was I going to say? So with that in mind, his ability to make those throws, what's interesting to me and what I want to unpack there is the willingness factor versus the, you know, has this been coached out of him? Is it important to allow him to make these throws? And I think you're right that it is. But one of the things is, and for my money, Nick, and I'm curious to get your take on this. I thought the best play Jones made all season last year, and maybe the best play in my mind of his career, as crazy as it sounds, and maybe not of his career. He had some really fun plays in that first Tampa game, and he had some good plays in that Washington game of his rookie season. But one of the most impactful throws that he's made in my mind, or plays that he's made, came against the Saints last year on a dig over the middle, where he made the decision in his head to understand the throwing window. This was the throw to Kenny Golladay. Wasn't there in the original throwing window. He saw it. He didn't throw the ball. He took a breather, settled himself in the pocket, and waited for Golladay to get into the second throwing window, and then made that throw with really good touch, really good ball placement, and solid velocity. And that's, to me, that's the crux of Jones. If he could do that, that was one time, and there were a few other plays on tape over the course of the season. Unfortunately, not many. Few is probably an accurate assessment of how many times we've seen that. I personally can't think of any others that exactly were like that, but I know just thinking back, my memory isn't great. There are a few that are probably pretty close. But if he could find a way to replicate that, and I know, again, it's utilizing the deep middle of the field, it's utilizing the dig route that we're just talking about, utilizing Golladay, which is important too, as number one receiver. But that to me is the crux of Jones, just finding a way to improve the, you know, processing in those first windows aren't open, maybe understanding, look, this guy can get into a second window. I have the time to sit and wait, and I can make that throw with accuracy. So that may be something, like you said, that increases under Brian Daboll. But I will say this, Nick, and I wanted to bring this up, so I want to get your take on this. It's a double-edged sword, to be completely honest, because while it's true that the coaching of Garrett is nothing that we get on board with, it was definitely bad for Judge. I'm sorry, for Jones, not Judge, obviously. With more tight window throws and big-time throw attempts, Nick, are going to come, potentially, not for all quarterbacks, but potentially for Jones. He had the fifth most and the sixth highest turnover-worthy plays. That dropped to just the 13th most and the eighth highest in 2020, and then in 2021, that dropped to just the 24th most, but still the 20th highest. So those numbers came down in large part because he didn't attempt these throws. So they're going to come. I mean, it's obvious that that will come with more, but the, I guess the crux here would be he has to find a way to find the sweet spot, right? He has to find a way to find the middle zone to be able to make these throws, attempt these throws, but also not put the ball in as much harm's way as he did during that 2019 season.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, and I think there are arguments for Jones truthers to be like, well, that was his rookie season, so let's give him a break. And I think that argument, yes, I think you take that into account because generally speaking, a couple years into your career, you have more experience. You're probably going to be a little bit more averse to turning the football over. But the main point, as we've said so many times, that Jason Garrett and Joe Judge was, let's bring those turnovers down. And that possibly, like we said on an earlier podcast, stymied Daniel Jones because he was so afraid to make a mistake, where Brian Daboll does not seem to have that same type of mentality. And that sounds all well and good right now, and we're celebrating it, but you're right. Week one rolls around and it's a final drive of the game. Daniel Jones thinks he can fit the football over the middle of the field and it's intercepted by a Tennessee linebacker. We're going to be saying, what the heck are you doing there? So it's definitely a double-edged sword, that very sharp. And I did love that throw to Kenny Golladay. That was off the play action, and I think it was the first play of the third quarter. I think that maybe the second quarter. Anyways, it was off the play action, that's a whole nother thing too, because Jason Garrett, to set up these deeper passing concepts, because the offensive line was so bad, he did a lot of play action, sometimes seven-step drops. Jones sets up, steps into the pocket, and then he unleashes the football under presumably good protection or possibly roll out, move the pocket type of stuff. I'm wondering how much of that we see with Brian Daboll, because it was something that Jones saw some success with.
I do want to get into this, but I don't. You brought up something that I don't want to pass on first. So let's keep this in mind. Let's put this on the burner because it's coming up soon. I want to talk about the numbers you found with Jones as a play action passer, because like you said, we may not see as much play action under Daboll, and we'll get to that in a second. But first, what I want to ask you, Nick, is this. Thinking back, just eye test memory from watch tape over these last 3 years with Jones, I feel like a lot of his turnover-worthy plays, obviously we just talked, the percentage was way higher in 2019, came down a bit in 2020, came way down in 2021 as his ADOT, average depth of target, completely plummeted to 31st in the league in 2021, which is obviously a big reason why you throw fewer turnover throws. But from my memory, Nick, I honestly feel like most of his turnover-worthy throws, if not almost all of them, were less an example, and this goes to your point of kind of the arm talent thing, of him trying to fit a ball into a tight window that he shouldn't have, getting tipped up in the air and intercepted, or somebody jumping it and getting intercepted. I feel like less of it was his willingness he's too willing to make these tight window, big time type throws. And more of it was just him simply being late. I remember a few plays, one against Minnesota that comes to mind, one against the Rams last season. There's a bunch over the course of his career where he's just too late with his processing and just sitting in the pocket, and he's like, all right, I'll come back to this throw. And then he doesn't understand that there's an underneath defender coming in who can make a play on that football. So I think for me, most of what I remember as far as his turnover worthy plays and why the percentage was so much higher earlier in his career were just examples of him kind of too late with his processing and then coming back to something that just should, you know, he's too late to make that attempt.
It might not be a processing issue. It could also be an anticipatory issue.
Right.
And I think that's another aspect of this as well, Dan, because the one play that kind of came to my mind when you said that was the play against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the fourth quarter where he threw the ball and Devin White tipped it up in the air and a Buccaneers defender, I think it was Mike Edwards, ended up intercepting the pass. But he had the guy open. The guy was turning. You're supposed to throw it before they turn, but Daniel Jones waited to kind of see him enter his turn before throwing the football. It was like he was a little bit hesitant to unleash, and he was also kind of moving away from some pressure at that time, throwing on the run, ends up getting tipped by an underneath defender. So that is something that he has to definitely work on, and I agree. I think a lot of those interceptions and a lot of those turnover-worthy plays all came because he was just a little bit too hesitant and maybe was a little reluctant to throw the football with anticipation, which is something we have seen, but maybe not consistent enough.
Not consistent enough at all. It's not even a maybe. I mean, that's one of the biggest crux of Jones. He has not thrown with anticipation nearly enough from a consistent standpoint that you need to be to not only be a like winning starting quarterback, but anywhere near a Super Bowl quarterback. And I think you brought it up great with that example from the Tampa Bay game. I think of them trying to mount that comeback against the Rams 2 years ago where Jones was kind of just late on that sideline, throw the interception to seal that game and lose that game. I just think
Deion Lewis 2-point conversion against Tampa.
Deion Lewis 2-point conversion was really bad. Yeah. That was the worst one. That ball has to get out a lot faster. But what I wonder is how much of this can be fixed with a coach who says, you know what, screw it. I don't care if you throw interceptions, just make these throws. And how much of it is just simply natural, the ability to anticipate, the ability to see the field well enough to know that in your mind, everything has to work so fast, right? Like in this is why it's so hard to be a quarterback. You have to, in your mind, anticipate where this receiver is going to get open. Then you have to, in the same time, and you know, with the same kind of rhythm, set your footwork up, set your lower half up, set your upper half up, and then get the ball out, like with your release being fast enough to get the ball out. And with all that, your release has to be, you know, sound enough and your mechanics have to be sound enough that you have to be able to put the ball into the spot where you want to, where you anticipated it. And so I know you're going to have now a coach who's like, try it, go for it. You know, and that will help in some ways because I think as we'll see as we get to the under pressure stats, his A dot just plummeted. Like his adjusted completion percentage was actually better in 2021 than any season while under pressure. But it makes sense when you consider his A dot just absolutely plummeted. And A dot, for those who don't know, is averaged up to target. So what that tells me is when he got any sense of pressure, the coaches are probably just like, throw to this outlet, throw to that outlet, just get the ball out underneath because this average depth of target was just insanely low. So for me, it's a matter of, you know you have a coach who's saying go try it, but as a quarterback, it doesn't really matter what your coaches say. You have to be able to anticipate this stuff and where it's going to happen. And then, like I said, everything has to work in line from the lower half to the upper half to, you know, your mechanics and everything like that. So it will be interesting to see how much coaching can help this type of situation.
Yeah, I think it can help, but you're 100% right. And you also can't get locked on, too. That's another thing that I felt like Daniel Jones does. And it's not even traditionally when he's just sitting back in the pocket, but on those move the pocket plays where you have players from the backside flowing in your direction with you and you're using your athletic ability and you trying to throw on the run, something Daniel Jones doesn't necessarily do a great job at. There were plays throughout this season that just come to my mind off the top of my head. That I remember there was one against Carolina where he just locked on to the out route at the sticks. It was a first and 10 play. But if you look just a little bit to your left, you have the receiver from the backside wide open in the middle of the field. This would have been like a 40-yard gain, and he just didn't see it or anticipate it whatsoever. He was just locked on to see if the wide receiver was going to out-leverage the cornerback between the numbers and the sidelines. And it was basically split between the two. So there was not a lot of operating space. So I would also say he gets locked on a little bit too often for me. And that's another thing that I feel like hopefully can get corrected in a different system, a more progressive system and a more loose system.
And I think just based on what we've said about him over the years, when we do the film evaluations, it's more than just getting locked on a little bit. And I think you'd admit that too, Nick. I'm not saying you're not saying that now, but I think it's quite clearly for anyone who watches his film, his number one trait space issue. It's been an issue for him since Duke, and less so at Duke because Duke was just such a get rid of the ball fast system, which I'm a little concerned with what we're going to get out of this stable year one, as long as Jones is quarterback kind of thing. Because I know there's all this hope of him throwing downfield, all this stuff, but it seems to me so far, based on OTAs, a lot of it's going to be, let's find these quick layup throws, which can work at times, but may it really limits your offense, in my opinion, your game planning. And I think it's kind of easy to take away with some defenses who have the right personnel to do it. But what I'll say is this. The slow eyes have been a factor for him since his Duke days and since coming into the NFL. His locking onto his reads, well, that's because he's not processing well. It's because he thinks something's going to be there before the snap. He goes to look at it. It was a solution that he figured. It's not like he's just saying like, oh, I think I'm going to throw to the X here. It's not like Madden. You know, when you, I don't want to make it seem like that because it's so different. It's not like when you're playing Madden, you're looking at the route combination. You're like, before the snap, you know, you do this. Everyone does this, Nick. And you're like, all right, I'm going to throw to the X based on this. I think it's going to be there. Then you snap the ball and you're kind of just going there almost no matter what. It's not that. For him, it's like, he's reading the entire defense. He's trying to anticipate where the defense is going to rotate after the snap based on what they're showing. He's remembering other things that they've shown. And then he's catching the snap. He's setting up, and he's trying to make that throw to that spot. And I guess it is sort of like Madden in the sense that he's – it's not that he's going to do it no mater what, but he's looking, he's looking, he's waiting. And then it's almost like maybe I can get throw it in the second window, but that second window ends up not being there. And then ultimately nothing is there because he waited way too long on his first read. All the other progressions are now no longer an option for him. And honestly, to me, that's been the number one issue for Jones by far. And I believe he's one of the worst in the league, to be completely honest, at that. And I think it's not just a belief. It's what you would, what it's the main reason for his struggles. And so how much of that can be changed with the right coaching?
That's the big question. And I think it can be changed, but it's not even there were plays. And again, I want to make this clear. He makes more positive plays than he does negative plays. Okay, but still, like, how far is that going to get you in the NFL? If you're making more negative plays than you do positive plays as a quarterback, you're screwed. Like, there's no way you're going to find the football field. So I don't think we're being nitpicky or anything like that, but I feel like this is a reality that we have to address. So there was a play against the Falcons that I remember. I think it was like a third down. They were backed up on their goal line, and pre-snap, the Falcons were showing just straight cover two, and they dropped into cover two. It wasn't anything different post-snap, and Daniel Jones still locked onto the out route thinking, okay, it is cover two. That cornerback's going to be vacated by the nine route. But the cornerback was just playing cut, and he just sat there and just baited Daniel Jones to throw on the football. Daniel Jones sat back in a clean pocket for a while, just waiting for Kadarius Toney to kind of get into his break. If he was a little bit more anticipatory for what I think it was Isaiah Oliver, one of those cornerbacks down there, he would have known that the nine route was going to be open because the orientation of the hips of that cornerback was, I'm going to cut and jump that little out route. And that's exactly what happened. Daniel Jones almost threw an interception and ended up being incomplete, and the Giants punt the football. But if he waited a little bit, he had Colin Johnson or Kenny Galladay, one of those big receivers, just streaking down the field in the honey hole. Those are like the little things that you see on the film, and you're just like, you don't see good quarterbacks make those types of mistakes. So those quarterbacks make defenses pay when they get overly aggressive. But defenses don't necessarily respect Daniel Jones like they would a good quarterback.
And that's one of the bigger issues we'll get to when we talk about the blitz numbers, because that's obviously how defenses want to play him. But before we do that, Nick, I want to talk a little bit about the play action numbers you dug up, because, look, there is a concern for me that not a concern, but I will say this. Everything is great when it comes to the change from Garrett to Daboll. I'm really excited about it. I'm really hopeful about it. I think there's going to be so many more positives than negatives. Overwhelmingly more positives. But one area where I'm a little concerned about is the play action passing game, because this is an area where I thought you did a great job of breaking down earlier. Jones has really excelled from. He has, and this is something Greg Cosell talked about after Jones's rookie season in 2019. Cosell was like, one thing I really like about, and just for those who don't know, Greg Cosell is the OG NFL films guy, literally just spends hours every day watching film. Like, I trust his takes more than just about anyone, if not anyone, especially at that position. And he talked about after his rookie season how one thing he really likes about Jones is that he shows an advanced ability to turn. And this seems like such a simple thing. Like, even when he broke it down, some people who just are new, you know any general knowledge about the NFL will be like, oh, that's simple. Every quarterback should do that. But he made a good point of saying, no, like, I watch a lot of film. A lot of quarterbacks struggle with this. Anyway, what that is he did a great job of snapping his head around really fast off the play action so he can set himself up to see the field and make the right throw. And I think Jones has actually been a really good play-action passer his entire career. The numbers obviously showed as well. We're going to get into that in a moment when you break them down. Are you a little bit concerned that that might go away this season? Because at least what we saw in Buffalo, it was not a play-action heavy offense. There were some meaningless play fakes that the defense didn't really fall for, and the linebackers probably didn't even read the keys on, to be quite honest. It was a pass-heavy offense. It was pass almost always on first down. It was pass often. It was a lot of spread. It was a lot of shotgun. It was a lot of hurry-up, some RPO, which we're seeing a lot of with the Giants. Are you at least concerned about, you know, going away from that drop-back play-action passing game with Jones? And then talk a little bit about his numbers there.
I think Brian Daboll's going to incorporate the play action pass because I think the Giants are going to run the football more than Buffalo ran the football. Okay. So I'm not too worried about it. But in terms of Daniel Jones's play action passing ability, so in 2021, he dropped back 31% of the time. 2020 was 26.9% of the time, which according to Pro Football Focus, he had his best grades in terms of play action passing in 2020. And then 2019, it was 18% of the time. In 2021, let's just focus on that real quick. He had a yards per attempt of 7.2 with 5 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 4 drops, and a completion percentage of 68.1%, which is higher than his normal completion percentage. In 2020, he had a completion percentage of only 59%, yet he still had better grades, 7.1 yards per attempt, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and then the big 6 drops. So there were a lot of drop passes. His turnover-worthy plays were also down. He only had 2.3 in 2020 and 3.6 in 2021. And then in 2019, Pat Shurmur's offense, he had a 65% completion rate, 8.6 yards per attempt, which if you will remember, he was attacking downfield. I mean, him and Darius Slayton, they were just like best buddies down there, just taking advantage of one-on-one matchups. And Darius Slayton really came through in those situations. But there were also 5 drops, 8 touchdowns, 2 interceptions with 4 turnover-worthy plays, which was a 3.8% rate. So some of this, like, you could see huge disparities between the completion percentage in 2021 and 2020, 68% to 59%. I mean, that's a pretty big disparity, but I think there's a lot of context there that's being left out because Pro Football Focus, I mean, they had better grades in 2020, and those 6 drops, 2 extra drops, and the less turnover worthy plays obviously works in favor for 2020.
Yeah, not to mention, I mean, if you look at it, I will say this. The yards per attempt is what stands out to me, Nick, because 8.6 yards per attempt in 2019 off the play action pass. If you could do that your entire career, you're going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Generally, if you could somehow get to 8.6 yards per attempt in your career overall on all your passes, you're now Patrick Mahomes, you're Tom Brady, you're one of those guys. But even the 7.1 in 2020 and the 7.2 yards per attempt in 2021, these are all well above Jones's overall yards per attempt. Now, I've heard from a lot of NFL analysts that 1 yards per attempt is by far and away the best traditional stat to use for a quarterback, and to me it makes a lot of sense. 2, I've heard you need about between 7.3 and 7.5 to be, and typically now it's kind of risen as the numbers have gone up with the NFL game and the passing game, but around 7.5 is what you're looking for as an overall yards per attempt to know if your quarterback is giving you above average play at that position and giving you a chance to really move the football through the air on a consistent basis. And I know Jones didn't reach those numbers in those last 2 seasons off the play action, but in all metrics from every single season, he's had a higher YPA, yards per attempt, off the play action. So I think you're right. I think we're going to see a lot more running than we saw in Buffalo from this Daboll offense. And I think we're going to see a usage of the play action pass. And that's a really good thing for Jones.
So according to all the other quarterbacks in the league, Jones was 27th last year for quarterbacks that played 20% of their snaps.
In yards per attempt, are you saying?
Yards per attempt, yeah. Jameis Winston, who I guess played more than 20% of his team's snaps, well, he had 10.3, Baker Mayfield 10, Joe Burrow 10, and then Jimmy
Garoppolo.
Is that
overall, Nick, or is that off the play action pass?
This is off the play action pass.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. So maybe I was way wrong in that. Maybe these numbers need to be better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know how much this factors in attempts because, like, Jameis Winston only had the 49 dropbacks, but he played the minimum dropback, or he played minimum of 20% of his snaps. But then you'll look like someone like Matt Stafford at 186, Josh Allen, according to this, did it 270 times off the play action. I think a lot of Buffalo, they go into the mesh point, but it's not like,
it's like a zone fake play action.
Yeah. And then like Tua had 183. Daniel Jones had 128 with the average of 7.2, 5 touchdowns, 2 picks, 27th in the league. So just for a context on what the rest of the NFL is doing. And some of these quarterbacks had a lot of
fun. Everything I said about it being healthy at 7.2, please.
I mean, yeah, it's also respective of the offense. Like, I think that's another part of this. I think a lot of teams, once they saw it was play action, just from watching the film, I don't have any analytics to back this up,
there wasn't a lot of one-on-one matchups. It's like the safety and the cornerback would both go off of that one guy who was running and streaking down the field because the Giants would like to keep six, seven guys in protection. So there was only like two, three routes out. And if that one guy was covered, which he typically was, Daniel Jones would kind of check it down to Saquon Barkley or whomever. So I think that's another reason why the yards per attempt is down a little bit, because there were a lot of checkdowns near the line of scrimmage. Yeah. I think whenever Jones actually had somebody in a one-on-one matchup, he would blodge and he threw the football.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I think that's something we'll see a lot more of this year, by the way. Obviously, we know we're going to see a lot more of that this year because the coaches have said as much. All right, Nick, let's take a look into some of the advanced stats for Jones when he's under pressure versus when he's throwing from a clean pocket. Now, let me preface this by saying this. Under pressure is not the same thing as being blitzed. Under pressure essentially just means a defensive player has won a one-on-one matchup or multiple defensive players, and they're in the face of the quarterback and they're pressuring him. That could come with a three-man blitz. That could come with a four-man blitz. But when you're hearing stats versus under pressure versus blitzed, blitz means the defense is usually typically sending five or more players. Blitz is a lot of what we're going to see from Wink Martindale this year. A lot of those second-level guys attacking downhill right at the snap. And so these are different things to evaluate, in my opinion, obviously. One is the defense making a concerted effort to kind of take away some of those guys in coverage, whether that be the safeties or the second level guys in zone, whatever it may be, to use as blitzers. And the other is just essentially maybe the offensive line breaking down, the quarterback not reading the play fast enough, the quarterback not going through his progression fast enough, and eventually pressure getting there. Now, from what I've heard, stats against the blitz are not typically sticky year over year. This is what I heard from somebody I spoke with at Pro Football Focus. And these are all Pro Football Focus stats, by the way, but they're advanced stats. They're not grades. Again, remember, we all, me and Nick, both hold Pro Football Focus accountable. We take their grades with a grain of salt. But these advanced stats, I do put a lot more weight under because they're just stats. You can interpret them how you want to. They're not grades. They're not as subjective. Though I do think the big time throws can technically be subjective in some ways. Nick, this is a tangent, but when I was reading about him today, Nick, I was like, I don't know, because it was like, we consider big time throws the percentage of throws that are either 20 yards plus down the field or into a tight window. Now, who decides what a tight window is? That's the subjective part, I guess. But anyway, I digress. What I've heard is the stats from a clean pocket are really what you want to focus on because they're the most sticky year over year. A quarterback should be performing well from a clean pocket. He should be able to deliver the ball on time, accurately, and, you know, in a spot for his receiver to make a play on it. So I do want to factor both in, though, because the pressure stats are important here. So here are Jones's numbers. First, we'll talk about under pressure. The key standout stats for me, I'm not going to go over all these. If you want to, I can send you guys a list of these and we can talk about it there. But just looking into it, the key stats under pressure for me is he threw 50 first downs under pressure in his first season, the 12th most, 53 in his second season, the eighth most, and then that plummeted all the way to 28 first downs, 28th most in his last season in 2021. So this is the first one I want to focus on because of this. One, some people say, oh, well, he played fewer snaps. To be honest, he only played one game fewer this season than he did his rookie season and three total games fewer than he did in 2020. So the numbers shouldn't be that spared. He was also kept clean on 65.5% of his dropbacks in 2021. That's actually the highest percentage of his career for being kept clean because he actually has dealt with really bad, kept clean numbers. So career low on first down throw. Career low first down throws all under pressure. That's finding a solution to get a first down. Career low ADOT, his average depth of target plummeted all the way to 31st while under pressure this season in 2021. So his adjusted completion percentage went way up. It was a career high, but again, a bit meaningless when you view it in the context of how few solutions he found, as in first downs, big time throw percentage going way down, and more importantly, the first down solutions going way down. How much of that is just he had no receivers were injured. Well, the play calling was really bad. Well, the offensive line was bad. When we kind of know that in 2019 and 2020, those things weren't that much better. I guess in 2019, the play calling was a little bit better to an extent, though I never felt Shermer was that good of a play caller. He was just kind of ran a really simplified high-low half-field read system for Jones that he took advantage of and really didn't fully because the numbers weren't great. As you mentioned, the yards per attempt, I think the overall yards per attempt in 2019 were still bottom five in the league. But how much of this is just, you know, Jason Garrett's system was figured out and they weren't doing enough to change things for Jones and for the entire offense?
I think it was all of those things. And I think it's also interesting just to note that the 7.8 ADOT off of the pressure is 40th behind Mike Glennon. So I think Daniel Jones didn't want to push the ball vertically, and he just always tried to find that check down every time he had pressure in his face. And yeah, you were talking about his kept clean percentage, which is funny because we think 2021 was the worst of the worst, which, I mean, it's kind of hard to like say that it wasn't, but the stats don't necessarily bear that out. But he also had a pressure to sack percentage, but only 15%, which was not that high. I want to say the highest was, I just organized it, Baker Mayfield. He was sacked 29% of the time. So that's a huge difference right there. Like Daniel Jones ranked, looking at it right now, 28th in pressure to sack percentage. And I kind of wanted to take this question in this direction before we move on. Do you think that has anything to do with Daniel Jones's ability to maneuver the pocket? Because it was something we talked about during the season that I felt like he took incremental steps to get better at. And I feel like he probably did a better job in 2021 maneuvering the pocket and avoiding pressure than he did in the previous two seasons.
100%. And the stats completely back this up. We talked about his ability to throw downfield. We talk about his ability to layer the intermediate and the deep digs and fit that ball into that window where it needs to be. Those are two areas he's done well. This is not an area where he's done well that you bring up, but it's an area he's certainly improved on. Just by the numbers, he had back all the way, we're talking about back in 2019, his pressure to sack percentage was 18.1%, the 12th most in the NFL. And then that number dropped completely. Well, it didn't drop completely. It went to, in 2020, to the fourth highest percentage. So it actually got worse. And then, boom, like you said, he made some really incremental steps in 2021 by really improving that number and throwing it completely out the window and really changing that to the 21st in the NFL. So from 12th most to fourth highest to just 21st most. And what we're seeing over these last few years from some really good studies are sacks are, in a lot of ways, a quarterback stat. For a while, fans especially have driven the narrative that sacks are an offensive line stat. Unfortunately, or not unfortunately, the reality is they're not. There are two players in when it comes to sack: the offensive line, the pass protection, and the quarterback. And the quarterback plays a big role. They looked at it with Malik Willis's numbers. We've looked at it with Kyler Murray's numbers. Baker Mayfield's a great example. You brought him up. And so this is an area Jones has improved. I think he's done a better job of it, Nick. I still want to see him be able to manipulate and reset the pocket better. I think he does a good job of stepping up now through pressure, something he was struggling to do earlier in his career. And even at times bailing when he needs a bail earlier, when he should, you know, doing a better job of not doing that as much. But I still would like to see more of the Joe Burrow, more of the guys who can kind of, the Brady, the Matt Ryans, the guys who know how to really sidestep and do those little stutter sidesteps and reset where the pocket is and manipulate the offensive line, and manipulate the defenders to go into a spot where they don't, where they're not going to be able to kind of get their hands on him and bring him down. That's still an area that I don't think is born really by the stats, but I just feel like that's from the film, an area he still needs to improve on.
I would agree. It's definitely an area he needs to improve on. And I want to make one thing clear, or just maybe clarify what you said about the offensive line being guilty and the quarterback. I think also the play caller and the style of the quarterback, because when you look at someone like Joe Burrow, he was sacked 70 times last season. Like, that is a ton of sacks, but you sacrifice, well, A, the offensive line sucks, but you sacrifice the ability to possibly take these sacks here and there, right? For the ability for him to find Jamar Chase down the field for 60, 65, 70 yards. So I think that also kind of plays into it. So like, I don't look at Joe Burrow as somebody who's like, yo, you're terrible as a quarterback, you know, but like Daniel Jones doesn't have that type of skill set or that type of propensity to consistently look and keep his eyes downfield because he trusts his receiver and he knows his receiver is going to win that one-on-one matchup, whereas Joe Burrow did. Offensive line in Cincinnati was bad, but Joe Burrow also really tried to extend a lot of plays and got himself into some trouble.
Yeah, for sure. And he even talked about it, Joe Burrow, this offseason. I thought it was a great conversation he had where he talked about breaking down how most of the sacks he took were either in their own territory or when they were in a spot where it wouldn't change the field goal attempt. Like, it would be in a range where they could still kick the field goal with McPherson, who's one of the really good kickers. So that was something he specifically thought and went into his process of like how long he can try to extend the play. And like you said, you get more freedom to do it when you're actually making big plays downfield and you're keeping your eyes downfield and making throws downfield. So that's another thing. Another area I want to talk about, which I think is probably one of the more legitimate excuses for Jones that you can make throughout his career, because it's backed up by the numbers and less so just by the eye test or the narrative base or the kind of like narrative street type of, oh, he didn't have this, this guy had this, he didn't have that, that team had this. it's the drop percentage, because that's really it's a true thing. I mean, you look at the first season under pressure, wide receiver dropped 5.6% of Jones's throws. That was the 22nd best, meaning like in a sense that you would want to be first for the least amount of drops. And then even next season, fifth most drops. Or no, I'm sorry. In the first season, he didn't have the drops. Sorry. I totally misread this. Only 5.6% at best is the 22nd best. So we actually had, you know, a really solid performance by receivers from a drop standpoint. But then in 2020, fifth most drops in the NFL. That number rose from 5.6% of his attempts under pressure to 13.4% of his attempts under pressure. And then in 2021, once again, a lot of drops from the receiver, the 12th most, 12.7%. So really jumped into the double digits, almost tripled in its first season, and then more than doubled in its second, from 2019 to 2021 there with the drop percentage. That's something we hope will improve this year with the addition of Wandale and maybe just better health, I guess, from these guys.
Yeah, it's something that we hope. And I mean, let's be honest here. There are two players that really come to my mind in terms of drops for the Giants. One is still here. One, I believe, can have an impact, and that's Darius Slayton, but it's no certainty that he'll make the team. And then the other is Evan Ingram. Evan Ingram was a drop king, unfortunately, and he's no longer here. So hopefully with Wandale, even though Wandale, the catch radius, the ball slightly behind, can he really adjust consistently and make that play? I think that's something that could cause some concern. But I'm hoping without Evan Ingram here and with a more stable group of receivers that number will come down as well. Dan, you remember before last season, what we kind of had a lot of concerns about with Daniel Jones was, and just the offense in general, was the red zone passing stats.
Yep.
His stats in 2021 weren't really better than 2020. Now, he didn't have the turnovers that he did in 2020, but just to go through it, inside the 20 passing completion percentage in 2020 was about 54%, which ranked in the bottom third of the league. He had 154 passing yards, 7 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. Inside the 10 was 52% with 42 passing yards, 5 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. So he's turning the football over. This was all in 2020. But when we transition to 2021, no turnovers. That's excellent, right? 10 touchdowns total, 5 from the 20, 5 from the 10-yard line. Excellent. But the completion percentage rate is damn bad, bro. 38%, 70 yards total, and 47%, 26 yards total. The 38 is second worst in the NFL behind freaking Garrett Gilbert, who played one game. Like, that's not anything to write home about. And that's inside the 20. And then in terms of inside the 10, 47% ranks just below halfway. Like, the highest in the league of quarterbacks that actually played a lot of football was Tua Tagovailoa at 76% completion rate. And then you have Dak Prescott at 71, Pat Mahomes at 68, et cetera. What do you make of that?
And that's just the completion rate. It doesn't even go into, you know, there were a lot of throws that were thrown short of the goal line in this offense, which was not helpful when you're in the red zone, especially if it's third down. I saw a lot of, remember the flare screen that Garrett tried to throw out there in one of these third and goals that was just completely rallied on. Obviously, you have 11 defenders. No one has to play the deep half. You're just going to obviously rally to these types of pathetic play calls. But
the screens to Sterling Shepard,
the screens to Shepard, the whip routes that go short of the end zone, just like the constant flow of BS. But that's one side of it. But a fair side of it is that Daniel Jones has really struggled to process in the red zone. There were multiple examples on film of a window open in the red zone that he just did not see in time and therefore did not make the attempt. And by the time he did try to make the attempt to whatever read he did come back to, it wasn't there. It was too late. And there have been issues with ball placement that I've specifically noticed on film over the last few years, specifically while trying to throw outside shoulder in the red zone on some of those fade balls. He's throwing a little too much inside. There was a throw to Kenny Golladay that stood out from last season, really, in my mind, and just a few other examples that it's a Jones issue in a lot of ways, but I do think that it's not as bad as, so it doesn't have to be that bad. Like the way you just described it, Nick, he's literally the worst, if not the second worst red zone quarterback in the NFL. And if you have that, you have no chance to win in the NFL. If that's your quarterback long term, you have zero chance at a Super Bowl. But I think he can get around the middle of the pack with better play calling down there and better play design as well in the red zone. That's the key too. There's so many easy solutions that these teams are doing in the red zone. You can just simply copycat. And a lot of them do or at least are based on pre-snap motion and things that you things of that nature. And that's just something we need to see more of, and we're going to see more of from the new Dave's offense. So I do think he can improve and take a big time jump there this year. It's just a matter of, can he ever be an elite red zone thrower? That's more of a question mark for me.
He did find Andrew Thomas for a touchdown.
No, but another game that stood out to me, though, in terms of his ability to attack in the red zone was that Kansas City Chiefs game, which I think you and I probably would agree was one of his worst games of the year, primetime game. But he had two touchdowns within the five-yard line in that game. Remember, he had the one out route to Evan Ingram. That was a well-placed ball outside. Yeah. Evan Ingram extended, ran into the end zone, and then he had one off the play action to Kyle Rudolph on like a little seven route. So he showed glimpses, like he always tends to do, that he can have success in these areas. But there were plenty of times, like you said, man, with condensed, a lot of bodies in a condensed area of the field where you're like, you have to just quickly diagnose that and get rid of the football. And I just feel like he's just a step behind. And that's all it takes is the NFL, man. It's a very quick game.
Super quick game. And he's all... That's the biggest issue with Jones so far. He's been way too often a step behind. Even that Ingram play, it comes to mind as an example of what I just mentioned earlier, which is great job, in my opinion, by the offense, by the coaches. It felt like on that play, if you look at kind of where the linebackers were talking to each other after the play, the tempo really got to them there, and it allowed that possibility on that play. The linebackers looked a little out of position before the snap where they were aligned. Am I remembering this correctly?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. I think it was Daniel Sorensen that ended up kicking out on him. And Ingram had the leverage, and Ingram did a good job just, I think, if I remember correctly, just kind of like running through his outside shoulder and kind of pushing off, but not an egregious amount. And then he just outran him because Sorensen's like 900 years old.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a good thing, though. I mean, we want to see more of that. We'll take easy solutions. I don't care how the Giants score. I just want them to score. I don't care if it's Jones, the offensive line, the receivers, the coaching. I don't care. Just want it to get better. And so that's something they'll definitely keep a look at. Let me run through some rapid-fire stats, and feel free to jump in at any time if you have any thoughts on any of these. So I'll start with this. Jones's big-time throw percentage versus his turnover-worthy throw percentage. So I looked at these numbers because, in my opinion, they take out the volume, you know, the factor of volume, because it's just going on percentage, which is important since Jones has missed so many games and hasn't played in all the games. So in 2019, he had the fifth highest big-time throw percentage. He also had the sixth highest turnover-worthy throw percentage. 2020, 20th highest big-time throw, 18th highest turnover-worthy. In 2021, 29th highest big-time throw, 20th highest turnover-worthy. So you see, in each year, his turnover-worthy throw rate has gone down, but also in each year, his big-time throw rate has gone down. So I almost feel like the Giants – we know the Giants can't win with those 2021 splits. That's obvious. You can't be the 29th – you can't have the 29th most – big-time throws, but also the 20th highest turnover throws. But I think you have a better chance to win with those 2019 splits. But also, if you can somehow improve those 2019 splits and get it to like 15th or in the middle of the pack as far as turnover-worthy throws go, but also kind of get, you might not need fifth highest, fifth best big-time thrower, but somewhere in the middle range, in the 10, top 10, top 12 range. And I think the Giants are just going to have to take the good with the bad with DJ when it comes to him being their quarterback.
I think you're right. And that's why I do find this year a little bit fascinating, because you have a new coach. Can he finally merge the Daniel Jones that is conservative with the football in terms of not turning it over with the Daniel Jones who likes to throw the ball deep with accuracy and with touch? And I hope that that can be converged. I'm not really 100% certain that it can be, and at least not consistently, but I will not be shocked if it does, because, you know, we've seen quarterbacks progress in the past, but there's a lot more that also has to happen. And it all comes down to diagnosing and mental processing.
Yep. Without a doubt. I also thought these numbers were interesting. I don't know if I have any takes on this. Maybe you do, Nick. Jones's 2019 through 2021 splits from a clean pocket. So this is when the pressure didn't get there. Even if they blitz, it doesn't matter. He's able to kind of set himself up from a balanced base, square his shoulders up, and throw the football. He had the 23rd most big-time throws in 2019. And now a lot of people remember that 2019 season as really just Jones firing the ball and creating a lot of explosive plays. The actual reality, though, is that memory is kind of it's wrong. He threw a lot of touchdown passes, 24, I guess a lot. I would say a lot for a rookie, 24. It's not really a lot total, but it's a lot for a rookie. But it wasn't – a lot of them weren't off of big-time throws, because he only had the 23rd most. That number jumped to 11th most in 2020, which I found surprising, but then plummeted down to 28th most. I was just surprised to see the 2019 versus 2020 numbers. I think I was kind of guilty of being in that group of thinking 2019 was so much more explosive than 2020.
Yeah, I definitely was in that group. And I'm trying to think back now to the 2020. The game that sticks out to me was the Bengal game. He made a couple big time throws and then he ended up getting injured in that game. But other than that, I'm trying to think of some of these games where these big time throws came from. And it's not necessarily clicked. He did not go over 300 yards in one game during the 2020 season. His most yardage was against Tampa Bay, which I think you and I would agree, other than the Pittsburgh game. His two worst games, Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh, were the two games where he threw for the most yardage. And they were two of the four games where he threw multiple touchdown passes. Just goes to show you sometimes, you know, stats don't always tell the story.
Yeah, without a doubt, it's a great thing. I mean, the raw stats on Jones are not what you look. I mean, I think someone said to me yesterday in my replies, I was so stunned to see this. I think only three times in his career has Jones had consecutive games with two or more touchdown passes. What a wild stat that is, right?
Yeah, one of them was week 7, week 8 in 2020 with Philadelphia and Tampa Bay, both games that I think we could agree weren't all that great. Now, Philadelphia game wasn't terrible. He finished with sub 200 yards, though, in that game at Philadelphia. So it wasn't as bad as the week 10 game in MetLife Stadium where Daniel Jones threw for 244 yards but missed I don't even know how many throws in that game, even though he finished with a 75% completion rate.
Yeah, that was an absolutely wild game. All right, let me take a look at some numbers versus the blitz, and then we'll kind of wrap it up as far as this goes, as far as just looking at the numbers goes. So we've talked a lot on this podcast about how I felt, and I know you felt the same way, that really ever since that Steelers game in 2020, week one, there's been a little bit of a book on Jones. And that book has been, and the craziest thing to me is this has been the case even once Barkley got hurt. A lot of the original narrative and thought process was, well, defenses are going to have to account for Barkley. That means they can't afford to play their safety, or that's why they're playing their safeties so far up against Jones. And that's why they're taking so many more risks with their coverages and with their safeties. But that changed even when, and we kind of knew that was false once Gallman came in and they didn't adjust, because in 2021, it really bottomed out. Here are Jones's numbers against the blitz in 2021. He had one touchdown to four interceptions. He had the 30th most first downs. So on plays where he was blitzed, he was 30th in the league on completing a first down from those plays. And just for a reference point, we talk a lot about Tom Brady. I remember last year, everyone watched that Giant game and they were like, what the hell? The Giant, I hate what Patrick Graham did. What the hell is he doing? He's just not blitzing Brady. Well, it's like, guess what? Tom Brady had the most first downs in the NFL. He had 74 first downs when people tried to blitz him. And people don't try to blitz him often. So that number's insane. They don't have the percentage stats here, Nick, but I'd love to see it. I'm sure he's way ahead of anyone else. You just can't blitz Brady. There was no other solution for Graham or any other coordinator. He's way too smart and way too fast at processing. You try to blitz him, things go worse. But Jones has been the opposite. He had the third most turnover-worthy throws. And this is despite, you know, an offensive system that didn't really ask him to take many chances and tried its hardest to not have him even attempt turnover-worthy potential throws. And yet, against the blitz, he had the third most turnover-worthy throws. And this goes against, you know, the third most turnover throws and only the 29th best big time throw percentage. So it's not like he was getting blitz and throwing the ball up into, you know, a potential big play scenario. And then also the 24th best yards per attempt. That's no good. And the 25th highest average depth of target. Now you compare those in 2021 to when he was not blitzed. He had 9 touchdowns and only 3 interceptions when he was not blitzed, and only 1.9% turnover-worthy throws, the 29th most in the NFL when he was not blitzed. So right now, it looks to me like a quarterback who is not finding any solutions when he's getting blitzed, but also, or at least wasn't last season. Let's keep that in mind, because it's been better at earlier times of his career, specifically 2020. But is putting the ball in harm's way a lot more when he's getting blitzed than when he's not. What do you make of any of that?
Well, I wanted to ask you, actually. So I have the PFF stats of just him being under pressure. So it's not necessarily the blitz. And he only had 2 interceptions when he was under pressure. Does that concur with what you have?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, so he only had the 2 interceptions. And it kind of circles back to what we said maybe about 20 minutes ago. I just think when Daniel Jones sees a blitz or sees the pressure, he goes either hot if he can diagnose it and find that quickly, or he goes to the check down and he doesn't kind of sit in the pocket and wait. And maybe that was a coaching point as well, because Joe Judge and Jason Garrett knew the offensive line was so bad. So it's not a great look. It's a very conservative look, but that's kind of where I lean. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's really true. I think there's a, you know, that's a big factor in this.
Yeah, I think he just would go right to that check down, right to that sweet spot instead of, you know, he might have even had a guy one-on-one downfield. There were times on film where he did, and we would always kind of excuse it. And it's a valid excuse to say, well, the blitz was coming. He was under pressure. He didn't want to take a negative play, and he didn't want to fumble the football, which we all know has become synonymous with Daniel Jones dating back to his rookie season.
Yeah, dating back to his Duke days, he had an incredible amount of fumbles in his career at Duke, actually. I remember reading that about that, and a coworker of mine being like, this is going to be a bigger problem than people realize right when he was drafted. And I was kind of shoot it off like, I never really remember fumbles being a huge problem for any quarterback I've followed. Let's just see what happens. But you're right, it could be playing a factor in his head. But the fact of the matter is this, Nick, the best quarterbacks in the NFL, or even just the quarterbacks who can win you Super Bowls, let's put it clearly like that, are the ones who are willing to make those throws downfield when blitz and have the arm talent to make those throws, because you're not going to get a clean bounce based a lot of the time. You're not going to get the opportunity to square your shoulders up a lot of the time, but you're going to have to still find a way to make those throws. And that's the key. Can Daniel Jones find a way to make those off-balance throws from a not clean platform when the pressure or the blitz is coming down instead of just opting to check down?
That's the big thing. And there was a play that comes to my mind against Philadelphia. I think it was the game he was hurt. It was a 3rd-and-7. So he's playing with an injury here. And you might remember this because I know you were a big John Ross guy. And they aligned in a bunch. And John Ross ran a horizontal cross. And I believe Jonathan Gannon brought 6 on the pressure. Daniel Jones actually stood in the pocket, ended up taking a hit, and he fired a ball in stride to Jonathan Ross, and it went for like 20 yards. That was one play that I think we talked about on the podcast, and we were like, yo, that was really good right there. He stood up against the blitz. Wasn't a play action, which is a normal play. I think there was another one against Las Vegas that I remember as well, where he like threw awkwardly, got hit, and found Kenny Galladay for a slant for like 15 yards. So there are plays where he's able to do it. But again, it goes down to that consistency factor. And I don't even think Daniel Jones is necessarily somebody who's scared of contact either, which you've seen quarterbacks in the past. It's not like he's afraid of getting hurt or taking a hit. I think some of it comes down, he's afraid of making a mistake, and it's just a lot going on, and he can get maybe a little panicky, but it's definitely not because of a lack of physical toughness.
Not because of toughness, not because of grit at all. Those are two traits I really like from Jones. And I think you said it best, Nick. It's never a discussion of, because I know we hear this a lot in our replies, or if anyone's kind of defending Jones, it's never a discussion of, can he do this? Because that doesn't matter. Every quarterback needs to be able to do this. And there are examples of when Daniel Jones has done it. Nick brought up two great ones. Every quarterback has examples of when they've done it. Even guys who are never going to be anything but backups. It's a matter of how consistently can they do it. On all these things we talk about, it's a matter of consistency. You have to get to a certain threshold to be even capable of winning, you know, winning more games than losing games. Then you have to get to the next threshold to be capable of getting your team to make a playoff run. Then you got to get to the even next threshold, in my mind, to be capable of consistently giving your team a chance to win Super Bowls every single year, regardless of like kind of what's around them type of thing. And obviously that doesn't mean, you know, put together a horrific roster like the Seahawks did last year for Russell Wilson. It means, you know, a pretty good roster that may have some holes, but you have the quarterback who consistently do these things enough to give yourself a chance to win. And that's where we need to get to with Jones. He has a really big jump to make from a consistency standpoint, really across the board, even with the things he does well, with the exception, I think, of the deep throwing, which I think he is already there from a consistency standpoint, just needs to get there from a volume standpoint, is what I would say with regards to that. But let's transition now, and we don't have to do too much on this, but I want to talk a little bit about Jones's traits here and some of the things that stand out to me. From a traits-based standpoint, putting aside these stats for a moment, Nick, what are some of the areas that have you excited about Jones and his development and his future with the Giants? And what are some of the areas that you're more concerned with? And then talking about the concerned areas, I want you to answer two questions, Nick. One, while you're breaking them down. One, do you think these are areas that can be improved? Two, if not, can you still win a Super Bowl or compete for Super Bowls consistently with a quarterback who doesn't have that trait?
So consistently, no. And I'm going to start with the negative. And I think we've, you know, hit it ad nauseum at this point. It's pre to post snap processing. It's pulling the trigger. It's not getting locked on to one target. It's getting rid of the football when the opportunity presents itself and not second guessing, which are all things that Daniel Jones does. Can that be corrected? I do believe it can be to a certain extent. Can you win or can you compete for a Super Bowl consistently is how you put it? No. Can you compete for a Super Bowl? yes, I think you can compete for a Super Bowl and you can get hot at the right time. The New York Giants, we know a lot about that. You have a good, strong defense. Daniel Jones doesn't do a lot to hurt your team and does enough to make help you win football games. I think you can compete, but I don't necessarily think that's sustainable if you don't correct your mental processing throughout the entirety of your of a play from the pre to the post snap phase on a consistent basis. In terms of the traits that I do like, we could start with his athletic ability. That is evident. I think he throws with good touch at times over the middle of the field. I think he's accurate on his deep passes. I think he's progressed in terms of using his eyes to manipulate middle of the field closed safeties and then throw to one-on-one matchups that he found advantageous. From the pre-snap portion, I feel like he's advanced in terms of throwing hot in 2021. I still think there's room to work, but I do believe there were plays against the Rams that I saw him get to the running back in the flat when he saw a backside blitz coming that he necessarily shouldn't have seen so easily because it was to his opposite set side. So there are a lot of things about Daniel Jones that I do appreciate. I don't necessarily think he is overly accurate on a consistent level. That's why I said it's more for the deep portion. I think he does have the touch. I think he can be more consistently accurate. It's something that I feel like you see in the short parts of the field, him just throw it inaccurately. And you're like, why the heck did he do that? So those are also things. I feel like he did a better job manipulating the pocket in 2021, still needs to develop there. So a lot of his game and a lot of the traits that I do like still have room for development, which gives you encouragement. Maybe he can take his game to the next level, but I still think the main thing that he needs to fix is the thing that this whole podcast has been centralized around, Dan, and that is his ability to speed his process up and find the open receiver post-snap.
Yeah, for sure. Because that's going to, and you're right about that, Nick, because that's going to negate a lot of the traits that I'm about to bring up that I have concerns with. But before I do that, I want to say this. Room to improve on is one thing, but also can he get there is another thing. So with regards to some of the things you said, the accuracy in the short game is not what I want it to be. And I know you just brought that up, which I'm so happy you did, because it doesn't get talked about a lot. His accuracy has actually waned in the 0 to 5 yard range. Last year, he was 33rd, I believe, in target percentage from a clean base on 0 to 5 yard throws. Now, that means, are you maximizing where you're placing the ball to give your receiver the best chance at yak? And it's so weird, Nick, because he did such a much, it felt like that was one of his best traits from the 2019 season when he had Shermer. I don't really fully know what happened there. Is it just a matter of, well, he works so much better with a mesh-based offense that's using a ton of crossing routes and throwing those crossers than he is when he has to throw a 10-yard comeback or a stop route or a back shoulder fade or something of that nature? That might be the case. That might be just the traits that he has, what he's been dealt, and what he's going to be, a thrower who's better in that, you know, crossing route type of game. I don't know, but it is something that concerns me. But a couple of the other things I wanted to bring up are, I think part of why the accuracy is what it is right now, which is, I guess, solid in some ways, especially down the field, but not overly great, especially for a quarterback who, in my mind, is going to have to be a pocket passer his entire career. And we'll get to why that's the case in a moment. But I think the footwork hasn't come as far along as what I had hoped it might, from the issues that were so clear on his film at Duke that I felt like made a little bit of progress with Shermer, but not fully. And just haven't been to where I was hoping they would get to with a quarterback coach like Jason Garrett, who's played the position, working with him. So what are your thoughts on Jones's footwork and where that's at?
So his footwork, I'm trying to think back to plays where, because there were plays on film where I was like, ah, man, I feel like his base was a little bit too wide there and his hips weren't necessarily oriented where they needed to be. The one play that actually comes to mind with that was the play where Saquon Barkley got hurt against Dallas and he kind of threw the ball high and then Saquon took a couple steps, ended up stepping on a linebacker and rolling his ankle, just typical New York Giants luck right there. But there were plays like that on in-breaking routes where I felt like he didn't aim right, if that makes sense. He didn't point the foot, and the foot, the hips, the eyes, the shoulders weren't all in alignment. So he was basically trying to use like Kentucky windage to throw the football and get it to where it needed to be. And it usually led to him leading a receiver too far if he was targeting the flat. I remember there was a play again where he targeted Elijah Penny against Denver and he just like basically threw it right into the ground. There were several plays like that where he had a guy in the flat and he just wasn't accurate. He didn't hit the guy in stride. And then there were also plays where he airmailed over the middle of the field. And I think it all comes down to his base. So I think consistently speaking, Daniel Jones' footwork doesn't really, it's not a huge issue with his game, but I feel like that crops up once every couple games to the point where you're like, what the heck? And that leads me to believe that that's a big enough problem to be discussed. And I think we've seen that in key situations, sometimes on third down and sometimes on first down and sometimes whenever.
Yeah, and it's the drifting to the left that I still think he does. It was his biggest issue at Duke on throws to his left. I think there's just, you know, still room to grow there, I guess I would say. But at some point, I at least have to be like, well, he's had 3 years. He's had two coaches who one was a quarterback whisperer in Pat Shurmur, the other who was known as a really good quarterback developer. And it hasn't really improved that much. Despite It's made strides. Like, trust me, it was way worse at Duke. Like, especially it was almost like 50% of the times he tried throwing left, he would drift with his feet before making the throw and be completely off balance and just inaccurate. That's not the case. Like, we watch enough tape, like you said, to know it's more of an issue that crops up every few games. But ultimately, for the quarterback that he has to be, it's an issue that can almost never crop up. And I'll get to that now, Nick. My biggest issue with Jones outside of the processing. So that's the obvious number one issue with Jones. My biggest issue after that is his ability, and this is way, way, way high up there. It's like, that's one. The one I'm about to say is two, Nick, and then it's a big drop-off because, one, these are his biggest issues, but two, these are issues, man, that I just don't know are recover. Like, if you have these issues, one, I just don't know how likely they are to improve. This one I'm about to bring up, I think, is almost impossible to improve. The processing, I guess, is possible to improve. A lot of people have a lot of different thought process on that. A lot of good smart minds I've talked to say, you either see it or you don't as a quarterback. It's not something that can really drastically improve. But at least there's some evidence and there's some speculation and some hope that processing can take a big jump. The second one I'm about to talk about is almost a guarantee to not take a jump for any quarterback that doesn't have it. And ultimately for me, man, my biggest drawback with Jones, no matter what happens this season, is if he doesn't have these two traits, I don't know that he can ever consistently give you Super Bowl chances. And then I just don't have any interest because I don't want another Kirk Cousins ceiling. I don't want another Ryan Tannehill. I don't want another Derek Carr. Look at what these Vikings and Raiders have gotten these last 5 years from building and banking on these quarterbacks. They've gotten nothing. They've gotten absolutely nothing. They've gotten not miserable seasons like the Giants have had, but they've gotten no playoff runs whatsoever. And so here it is, Nick. It's his ability to throw off platform. It's his ability to make throws. And you saw this last year when the Giants were like, well, our pass protection is so bad. Let's try to move the pocket. Let's try to make design pass plays that move the pocket. Well, when they did that with Daniel Jones, he didn't really successfully do that. And a lot of it was what you said before. He locked onto reads. But more of it for me is he just hasn't displayed any kind of consistency at all to maintain velocity and ball placement when he's not throwing from a balanced base, and more importantly, when he's not getting his shoulders squared into throws. That's the biggest issue for Jones. That's when we talk about arm talent, we talk about 37th percentile velocity, we talk about, is his arm talent adequate, is it solid? When you talk about his arm talent on the throws off platform, when he doesn't have the ability to square his shoulders and throw from that balanced base, it is not adequate. It is not solid. To me, it is clearly, quite clearly on film, below average at best. Can that be fixed? And how important that is that for a quarterback?
Yeah, can that be fixed is hard. I mean, I'm not a quarterback guru or a quarterback coach. I would imagine there's probably mechanical things that can improve that. I'm wondering how much of it is between the ears, him maybe thinking a little bit too much as well. It's a little bit difficult for me to say if that can or can't be fixed. But it's definitely an issue. It's something that we've seen for the last basically 3 years. He doesn't have many throws. There are a few, but like I said, he has flashes, but there aren't a lot of throws where he is moving in one direction and then he just puts a pinpoint pass on target, which is something you see a lot from these young quarterbacks who are mobile. Daniel Jones, very mobile, very athletic, has great escapability, or good escapability, I'll say. But when you get him rolling to his right, he doesn't really throw well in stride. And that's something that I think will always hold him back from reaching his full potential. Hopefully Brian Daboll can really help it. I'm not 100% certain if that's possible, though.
Yeah, I would venture to say it's very unlikely if we're going to be completely honest about the situation. And you mentioned throwing to the rolling to the right, rolling to the left. There's even far and few examples of him maintaining accuracy. And more important to me, it's the velocity. It just drops. No, both. It's really the ball placement and the velocity. They just take such a big, you know, pitfall. They just dip down so low. Now, there are examples of quarterbacks over time who haven't had this ability. Like, think of Drew Brees. How many off balance, you know, how many throws did Drew Brees made from an unbalanced base where he wasn't able to square his shoulders? Almost none, right? Tom Brady, how many throws did he make? Almost none. Mac Jones, a player a lot of people like, I'm a little bit skeptical of, but a lot of people like, he's not going to be making many of those either in his career, and he still might be good. But what do you need when you don't have that ability, which I, again, do not think Jones has, and I do not think that's going to change. What do you need when you don't have that ability? You need to be able to process defenses at a borderline elite level if you want to become a Super Bowl winning quarterback, in my opinion. I don't think there's any in between there. I think Matt Ryan's another good example of this. Haven't seen many of these types of throws from Matt Ryan, right? But Matt Ryan has done a really good job of mastering the processing element of this game. He never won a Super Bowl, but he got them there once. And I think he's a good example of maybe what the ultimate ceiling for Jones can be if he takes this huge step with processing. But look, again, if you don't have that off balance, if you don't have the ability to make throws when you're not throwing from that clean balance base with your shoulders squared, which is what Jones needs, you really, really got to be a good processor. So I think that's the big thing for me. Jones, this season, what I need to see from Jones, considering I'm most likely not going to believe the off balance stuff is going to change. I need to see him not make a jump in the processing, Nick. I don't need to see him go from like one of these bottom five, bottom 10 processors, which in my opinion, he is right now. I need to see him become a top 12 processor. And that could happen with Brian Daboll. It could have just been an example of all this time, Jason Garrett was holding him back all this time. You know, the offensive line was holding him back all this time. Wide receiver injuries were holding him back. But I need to see him become this really good processor that turns those flash moments as a processor, like we talked about earlier with that Kenny Golladay play where he waits for him to get in that second window, flash moments of processing to consistent moments of processing over and over and over again, punishing defenses as a passer.
That's what we need, and that's hopefully what we'll get too. I mean, it's hard to say right now, but I'm just going through my mind right now, and I think he had like one or two plays that were where it was, I would say, solid moving and throwing with accuracy 10 yards downfield, but there's not any that really kind of pop out to me, and that's problematic.
And it's crazy too, because his first game ever, he made a really good throw, yes, rolling to his left to Darius Slayton down the field.
It's like one of the best throws of his career, dude.
Yeah, it literally might have been the best actual pure arm talent-wise throw. It is actually the best arm talent-wise throw of his career, not taking away the processing, all the other things that go into it. Just pure arm talent-wise, it was the best of his career. And what happened? Like, how is there no more examples of that on film in a 3-year sample size? It's just so wild to me. Like, I know the coaching's bad, the offensive line's bad, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't really equate to no examples over such a large sample size, right? Like, at that point, like, you can't use these excuses for that large of a sample size. In a 3-game span, okay, I could say, you know what, the coaching was so bad, the offensive line play was so bad, you'll never see an example of it. But 3-year span, you were just expecting and hoping to see more. We'll see what happens in that regard. We don't have to get into too many more of these. We can do a trade-based stuff later. I think we hit the two main ones there, Nick. All right, Nick, anything else on Daniel Jones before we turn the page and start to like look forward to position previews? We'll talk a little bit about the other quarterbacks in the QB plus RB position preview, but anything specifically on Jones?
On Jones specifically, I mean, no. I'm just looking forward to it, dude. I'm eager for the NFL season to get here because we could see something different. It could be the same, but then at least we have some clarity on what the situation's all about.
Yeah, we will. We'll get a lot of clarity this season. I'm really looking forward to seeing Jones potentially progress within this system. Again, we see the flashes. We all see the flashes. Nick, myself, and you guys who watch the game. Some see more than others. The Daniel Jones truthers, they see a lot more than maybe I do. But we'll all know with certainty if those flashes turn into consistency. It will be obvious to us all. And so hopefully this year we finally get a consistent version of Daniel Jones. I think it's possible. I think there's a lot working in his favor this year, from the offensive line to a hopefully healthier receiver group with a little bit more talent even than last year. And then more importantly, and most importantly, I think for him at least, to a coach that's going to put him in a better position to succeed. So time will tell. Thank you so much for tuning into the Big Blue Banter Daniel Jones deep dive. Please, if you want to help us grow, I thank some of you have already done this. Please go ahead, leave us a rating and review on iTunes or on Spotify. Make sure you follow us. One key thing for us is we need you to download all these podcasts, not just hit play and listen. Make sure you hit the download button. I know I am a victim. I am somebody who makes a mistake often, and I've made a clear concerted effort to fix this. When I listen to podcasts, sometimes I just hit play and then I'm like, damn it, you know what, let me make sure I download this, which is good anyway because I listen to them in the car, so I don't have to go through those patches of no service where I lose the pod. But in general, it's great for the people who produce the pods. These are free pods, obviously, not to hone in on that, but just help us out in the little ways. Leave us a rating, review, download the pods, follow the pod. That's all we'll ever ask. So thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon. We're going to get into our position previews shortly.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.